You are listening to We Are Pittsburgh Talk Radio. Welcome to the latest edition of the Thomas Merton Center Show, a program that highlights the ideas and activities of members of a unique peace and social justice organization in Western Pennsylvania. My name is John Hare, and today we're looking back and looking ahead. Last year, we celebrated both the 43rd year since the center was founded and the centennial of the birth of its namesake, Thomas Merton. The center recently hired a new executive director, Tony Ladico, today's guest. What better time as we start a new year to discuss the center, its activities, its goals, and its new chief organizer. Tony, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, you know, Western Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh guy, grew up around here. Like many folks, went away to school and came back because I love the place. But, you know, for many years, I tried to, I'd say, stay away from the family occupation of organizing and agitating. I even went so far as to decide in school that I was going to be into science and I was going to be a scientist. That was the rebel. That was the rebel in me, right? You know, I'm going to get into the biological sciences and do research and not think about politics. And meanwhile, I'm still, you know, doing anti-sweatshop work and, you know, Free Mumia stuff and all kinds of different justice work there. So, you know, when I came back, it eventually came back, and I realized that, you know, that's my calling, is fighting, or I should say working for a struggle of justice and peace in our area and across. So I'm glad to be here where my values seem to be a really good fit for the organization.
Yeah, it's actually a privilege, I think, to be able to somehow match up your values with a job. It's not really an option that's out there and available for lots of folks, and I guess it's in your blood.
It's true, and it really is an honor to be able to do that with an organization with such a wonderful history and a wonderful present as the Thomas Merton Center. I really look forward to what I might be able to do in the future.
Tony, I know you had some organizing work, both growing up with it, but also in terms of your activities the last few years. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Well, maybe I'll just talk a little bit about my favorite organizing experience, or one of them, I should say. In 2008, I had just exited a program called the Coro Fellows Program for Public Affairs, and I was actually going to, I'm not going to name any names, but I was going to go with an organization that told me that they would love to pick me up, except in the case of a complete economic meltdown. And so, you know, of course, it being June, July of 2008, I can't stop by their place. And I was like, so what exactly did you mean by complete economic meltdown? And they're like, yeah, we're laying people off. We're at a hiring freeze. Sorry, we'll keep your name on the Rolodex. So, I mean, I'm sure a number of other people have experienced that too. I mean, 2008 being what it was and, you know, Pittsburgh being what it is. Anyway, got a great offer with a great group called the United States Students Association, which does organizing around students and student-based issues, and came in mid-season. And my job was in 2008 to go around and build up leadership in campuses across the state. And, you know, just seeing that young energy that was out there, that was ready to lead, that was really looking to build power and do good by their communities was amazing. That was something that, you know, that's one of those things that really inspired me and gave me a lot of hope for the future. I mean, I was going from everywhere from Pitt to Cheney on like a weekly basis. And, you know, in everywhere there were great leaders that were really helping out and doing wonderful things. I mean,
what were the issues that were motivating student activity?
So at that point, what we were doing is we were building power electorally by, you know, having, I'd say, leaders in student organizations get people out to vote. But the idea was that the relationships built by bringing those organizations together and kind of keeping those organizations in communication could then go and create a critical majority in things such as the student government. And then with the power of the student government, they could actually kind of leverage significant change around things like university policy on sweatshops, you know, statements about other things, you know, divestment campaigns and the like. I mean, you know, students, you know, when mobilized, just like everybody else, have a lot of power in their communities. And so it was great to see the energy behind that and some of the building blocks. Building, frankly, one of my favorite things is seeing where a lot of those folks are now. You know, John Fitzgerald Fitz, you know, has been working with the Fight for 15 campaign most recently, and mm-hmm. Grant Gitlin has been great in the mayor's office, in the Office of Community Engagement. The let's see, Chris Carter just came out with from Cheney, just came out with a law degree. And I mean, there's just so many great faces that I just have just watched continue to do great things.
So the Thomas Merton Center is a large and varied organization.
Yes.
Under the banner of peace and social justice, the organization is home to many initiatives and groups that have operated under the auspices of the Thomas Merton Center with the full support of the board and the community. Tell us a little bit about the Merton Center now, what you're looking at as you come into the office and see your to-do list. What are some of the things that are going on at the Merton Center today?
Well, I mean, I try not to look at the to-do list too often because it gets pretty long. What I try to do is, you know, identify one or two or three areas where I make really the impact today. But before I get to that to-do list, you know, I walk in and there's usually, like, every day of the week, there's a different volunteer who's willing to give their time to, you know, like, staff the phone and be there. And that inspires me, you know. Mm-hmm. Then I see, you know, two of my co-employees at least who are, you know, either, you know, working on the New People or other media work.
The New People's the publication of the center.
Yes, if you haven't yet, pick up your copy now. as well as, you know, going back and seeing Gabe, our organizer, you know, usually talking with somebody else out there. A number of interns that are in there in the back doing significant amounts of work. Sister Mary Claire, who keeps the office going, and she's wonderful. And then once I get through all of that, then I see if there's any coffee left. And usually I'll get another pot going, and then it's there. But you know, for me, it's really about that walk. It's really about that walk every day and seeing like how many people are in there, not to mention all the volunteers and leaders and, you know, other folks that are coming in on a regular basis to really help the center be what it is. That's what it really inspires me. And I mean, I think that's more important than anything on my to-do list.
You know, you mentioned the tremendous role that volunteers play in the center.
Yes.
I can't think of another, social justice organization with such longevity and also such success of involving volunteers and working yeah. together. Well, you can't have it any other way in a movement organization, really.
Oh yeah.
So, what are some of the peace and justice initiatives that are currently on the front burner at the center?
Well, I mean, I'd say the big thing that's really heating up is the Divest Pittsburgh campaign. Mm-hmm. And that's looking at how do we get the city's investments out of the fossil fuel economy. You know, it's a moral issue because of everything we know about global warming with there. But it is also a financial issue for the city, you know. And I don't see those as fully separate, right?
Right.
But there's a moral case to be made for us to get out of something that we know can very well likely destroy the planet as we know it. At the same time, there's also just a purely financial case to be made that as these markets continue, as dirty energy as a business continues, it will get more erratic and less stable. And we don't want to gamble with our city and our city's people's future in something that's increasingly erratic and difficult to keep an eye on and maintain.
And there's been a measure of success, I believe, in the organizing for this.
Yes, yes. I think it's a really good campaign. And, you know, I think we do have a shot at making a difference by making by having our legislators and our mayor put something good in there. And, you know, I think it's really going to happen in the near future. So what I would really advocate for anybody listening to do is to, if you get a chance, give us a call over at the center if you're interested in volunteering and helping out, because really the show of public support is really what's going to make the difference. If you are listening and you live in the city limits, please give a call to your legislator as well. Oh, our number is 412-361-3022 for anybody who's interested in getting more involved. Talk with Gabe McMorland.
And Gabe McMorland, the organizer for the New Economy Initiative out of the Thomas Merton Center. We are listening to the Thomas Merton Center. We're listening to the new executive director, Tony Lodico. We're about to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the ideas and the connections between peace and justice and working people in this country. Thank you, Tony, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
One big difference between the rich and the poor in our country is that the rich don't tend to have their drinking water poisoned by their own governor. Not that Republican Governor Rick Snyder personally dumped poison into Flint, Michigan's water, but by dumping his small-minded, ideological, budget-whacking policies on the people of this largely poor community, he did in fact poison them. Worse, when Flint's families complained that their tap water was oddly colored, nasty-tasting, stinky, and causing rashes on their children, Snyder and his top officials denied there was a problem, even when residents showed jugs of the brownish liquid to them. "It's a myth," claimed the authorities, accusing locals of, quote, "trying to turn the issue into a political football," and asserting that the complainers were just being finicky about the aesthetics of their water. Aesthetics? A General Motors factory in Flint had to quit using the water because it was corroding metal engine parts. And a hospital quit because the water was damaging its medical instruments. Finally, after out-of-state toxicity experts confirmed that Flint's water constitutes a major public health emergency, Snyder and crew were forced to switch from denial to damage control. He has since apologized to Flint residents and is trying to save face and his job by promising to fix the mess he made. Yet, when queried about whether he would pay to replace the city's lead-leaching water pipes, he demurred, using the old dodge that more studies are needed. This is Jim Hightower saying, the mess is not just in the water, however. Flint reveals that there is a much deeper contamination poisoning our country's political morals, namely, an insidious right-wing belief that poor people, particularly people of color who are poor, are undeserving moochers whose misfortunes can be ignored, even when their misfortunes stem directly from the discriminatory practices of slippery elites like Snyder, who are showing that they're not fit to hold public office.
Hey, this is Charles Showalter, host of the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. I want to tell you about an organization I'm proud to be part of, the Union Veterans Council. My friend Will Fisher runs the program. Will, he's a Marine and a member of the Painters Union. Will and the Veterans Council bring folks together and advocate on issues that are most important to veterans, especially the need for good jobs and a strong, fully funded, fully staffed Veterans Administration. Additionally, the Union Veterans Council works to remind folks that an attack on workers is an attack on veterans, and veterans and workers are one and the same. When vets like myself get out of the service, we're looking for good, family-supporting jobs. That's a union job, and the Veterans Council is at the tip of the spear in the lead for these fights. In short, the Union Veterans Council stands for a better life and fights for those who have fought for us. You can learn more about the Union Veterans Council at www.unionveterans.org. That's www.unionveterans.org. This Veterans Info Minute is sponsored by actohio.org. That's actohio.org.
Let's get America working. We must build, maintain, and repair our nation's crumbling infrastructure. Teamsters support a bipartisan approach to creating good jobs for American workers. Learn more at letsgetamericaworking.com. Teamsters strong, America stronger.
You're listening to We Are Pittsburgh Talk Radio, and this is the Thomas Merton Center Show. I'm John Hare. Our guest is Tony Lodico, new executive director. Tony, many of our listeners are people concerned about their jobs, fairness in the workplace, and their unions. Do you see a connection with these issues in the Merton Center?
Of course. I mean, one of our four issue pillars is economic justice, and I feel like the way that economic justice has manifested itself, you know, across the globe, particularly in America for quite some time now, has been the labor movement. You know, coming with a background that has been very close to labor, I look forward to, I'd say, working more closely with folks in labor to ensure that we have a greater degree of economic justice here and across the area.
Well, let's give a shout out to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio, where we're conducting this show today, and let our listeners know to the Union Edge that there's a lot of connection that working people might have to the volunteers and the issues and the activities of the Thomas Merton Center. What are some of the, we've talked a little bit about the issue of divestment of fossil fuels, a campaign for that, the successful campaign. What would you say is the major initiative dealing with war and peace in today from the center?
From the center right now, we're looking at kind of building the movement a little bit more, mm-hmm. and building our table, and we're culminating in the near future with an action on Tax Day, which is April 15th. For those of you that don't have it etched into your skull from driving up here to the north side right before time to drop in your tax forms, but we're really going to look at how much we pay in taxes and really what that means as far as the Department of Defense, right? And how much of our money really actually goes to keep, like, not just the wars, but the occupation, but the entire military system as large as it is. Right. Because most people don't necessarily think about that on a day-to-day basis. But that day when you're writing that $3,000 or however big of a check you have and you're putting it in the mail, that's the day that, it really kind of, I think, strikes home for a lot of folks. And we want to make sure that they understand what amount of that and how much of that is really there to support, to pay for the military and the military system.
Yeah, this is an activity, I think, from year to year that the center has and volunteers at the center have done. I was surprised when I first got a leaflet on Tax Day. Many people think when they're paying their taxes, man, who am I supporting? All those people that aren't working and that kind of thing. But you really look at how the budget is constructed and where the money goes, you're talking better than half, better than 50% of the whole federal expenditures are not devoted towards, domestic unemployment or paying for people that are sick. It's into huge new weapons systems and big security apparatuses.
Yeah, and I think it's important for us to think about where that money could go, right?
Right.
It's the idea that we have men and women who are in the military right now who, while they're working there now, if we were to, let's say, drastically reduce that, they would be then coming back into the civilian economy. And I think we need to do a good job of ensuring that as we transition to a more peacetime economy, that we actually make sure that that transition is a just transition for all the working people involved.
Yeah, it's really true for the fossil fuel divestment campaign.
Oh, that as well.
You have to keep in mind the economic impact and the economic players and the fact that our country has no real planning system for transition from and training from one job to another, nor for really an economy that is kind of based on social goals rather than just corporate profit. So that's quite a connection there.
Well, I think across the board, figuring out how we do just transitions as a society is important in the long run. And, I think that's also important, with the goals of the Merton Center. Thomas Merton, as many people may know, it was a man who was very invested in peace and nonviolence, not just nonviolence as in the absence of physical violence, but in the way that we communicating in a peaceful, positive way as well.
In this dangerous world, I think it's important to have notions of possibility for social change, popular activity, aggressive but meaningful and useful ways in which there can be political activity. And the Merton Center has always been, volunteers and adherents have always been motivated by the notion of nonviolent, peaceful but militant social protest. And actually, when you think about it, there's lots of connections between those kinds of activities, the growth of our labor movement and the country, the growth of the civil rights movement. And do you see some of those connections as important for the activities that go on?
I see huge connections. I mean, I think we as a movement, you know, the bigger the tent, the more welcoming we are for folks who have, I'd say, different core issues, you know, to really come together is key. I mean, one of the things that really struck me about the center was that we look at the people that come into the center as full individuals. You know, it's not, it's many times we feel like we only have the capacity to really run one campaign in an organization or focus on one type of justice. I think the Martin Center does a good job at actually looking at justice comprehensively and saying this is a full person who today they might really be concerned about, you know, the air quality and what happens with that. But the same person might be concerned about affordable housing. That same person might be concerned about something like sexual assault in the military. That same person might be concerned about something like, anyway, you get the idea.
There's education of their children,
there we go.
Or the criminal justice system.
Most people I know have concerns about a lot of these things.
Sure, of course.
And so making sure that people know that we are a place where they can go to find out about how to get more involved and really be a center for kind of grassroots activism where people can come and, you know, get some tools and get some help and really having their voice heard out there.
Tony, I'm guessing that your best training has been as an organizer. And I'm thinking about you're discussing organizing students. What do you think is the understanding that kind of puts a light in people's eyes and a spark in their understanding to take that step, that first step to maybe actually begin to do things that are difficult initially? A lot of people, it's very difficult to speak up and to mean that they're standing out, perhaps doing something different than what their friends and, you know, some of their family and others are used to seeing happen for them. What is it that helps people get that spark?
I think it's different for everybody. You know, that's one of the great things and about people, right? We're all different.
That's true.
But at the core, it's really making a connection, talking to somebody, asking them about their past, asking them about their values, asking about where they come from. When you start to have those conversations, you start to find amazing things about a person that you wouldn't otherwise. And I think it's really, if you start with the path of understanding who the person is that you're communicating with, the capacity to really find true points of connection and where they might see the world having some problems and where they might see how the world could be a better place. From there, it's really about establishing and maintaining trust through that relationship with people, so that they really trust you with their time and their energy. And I hope to be a good steward of it at the Martin Center.
Yeah. First thing I read in the Organizing 101 was, good organizers shut up and listen. Hey, Tony, we're real happy to hear some more about you and to present you to our listening audience. And Martin Center is real proud to have a young and dynamic organizer in a chief organizing position. Thank you so much for appearing on the program. Hope to have you on again. I'm sure we can. And to listeners of We Are Pittsburgh, this is the Thomas Merton Center Show. Become a member. Subscribe to our monthly publication, The New People. Go to www.thomasmertoncenter.org or call us 412-361-3022. Tony, any final words here?
I just want to say, if you're interested in talking with a great young dynamic organizer, Gabe's at our office and he's going to be young for longer than me. I think officially I only have 8 months left. So if you're counting September 20th, I'm no longer in the 35 and under crowd. So, we're still going to be doing a lot of young organizing work. And I think we're going to still be doing the issues. But if you want to see me as a young organizer, you have about 9 months to stop on by.
I'd say it depends on your point of view. Look, Thanks,
enough,
Tony. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm John Hare. Thanks for listening.